It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 15th day of September 2021. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. And if you pop in right this very instant, because the program being live, of course, and you listening live, of course, then you will be greeted by the likes of Anatole and Squeaky and capably moderated by, ta-da, me. And so at that point in time, the word capable probably takes on a rather fluid meaning because I'm not much of a chat room moderator at all, but I will do the best that I can until pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve, arrives. Hi, I'm Robin. And like I said, it's the 15th, and it's a big day. It's a big deal of a day. So much has changed, and so much water under the dam or over the bridge, however you prefer to express it, in a year's time. This is my 1 year mark for not being a smoker. Actually, I think I had my last cigarette toward the end of the night, last night a year ago, and today, a year ago today, I woke up determined that I would not smoke again. And at the time, I did talk about it. I don't know how much, because I think I was still worried about whether or not I could succeed, and I didn't want to fail in grand and public fashion, but the reason I had to quit, as we all know now, was because I couldn't be a smoker and a woman in transition at the same time. I had to quit in order to start estrogen. And we'd been working on thinking back and how frustrated I got. We had the devil's own time getting my prescription transmitted to the place where I actually purchased my medications at the time. And it finally happened, and I put on my first estrogen patch, and, well, thank you, Brother Deacon. That's so uplifting and so affirming. Too bad you stopped huffing glue at the same time you quit the ciggies. You're no fun anymore. Oh, I know. I'm probably just boring. Yeah, right. From the moment that, you know, having quit smoking and I put on the first estrogen patch and we were off and running, of course, I didn't say anything about that until New Year's Eve. That'll be a big party here here in a few months. But it was New Year's Eve when I told y'all all about it and pretty much told the world. And so it'll be even bigger this year. I was talking with the University of Alabama Birmingham Medical Center earlier today. We were going over some of the finer detail points of what's coming up, and we're still on schedule. Everything is still rocking along, and we're waiting for word back from the insurance company, who really have nothing. They got nothing to complain about. They say they pay. They're going to pay, and the hospital and the doctor are both in network, so that works to my advantage as well. Fingers crossed, but we are a year in, and I'm blown away by what that year is. So it has been kind of a big day. I mean, there's no champagne corks popped or anything, but just kind of a moment of reflection and introspection and realization of how far I've come and how far there is yet to go, and how many wonderful, wonderful, wonderful people helped make that possible. Because we, for the most part, most of us do not transition alone. We have, when we have it, we have warm and loving family and friends who take the journey with us. And I am so grateful to you and all the other members of the Horn Family Community Congregation who have stood by my side during this process that I can scarcely begin to express it. Not to get all mushy or anything. Remember, I'm no fun anymore. But I am grateful beyond my ability to put it to words. So thank you, and I hope you can somehow or another celebrate this year with me, because it really, really is a tremendously life-affirming and life-changing event for me. This time last year, remember who was still in the White House? We know now more than we knew then about just how absolutely bug-eating crazy he had already gone, and he is still crazy, and we will get into that. It's also prayer meeting Wednesday, and you know, it's weird. I ran across a story earlier today, and it's one of those moments where I can't tell from the headline if he's complaining about the princes of the church, or if he's angry about a baseball team in St. Louis. From Agence France-Presse, Pope rails against vaccine denier cardinals. Well, given the state of sports in America, I mean, Jesus Christ, Greg wrote in toward the end of the program last night to let me know that five assistant coaches on the NFL's New Orleans Saints team had been tested positive for the Rona. Oh, and by the way, I got a negative test. The results, I had a test yesterday. I got results back today. I too, am negative and hope to remain that way. So, but I don't know if Pope Frank is mad at the princes of the church or at a baseball team in St. Louis. Yeah. So anyway, just to continue, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. And this program is no different. And so we send out thanks today here at the halfway mark of the month. Thanks go out to Robert. Thank you, Robert. And thank you to Nagla. Thank you, Nagla, so very much. And thanks as well, jumping in on the fundraising deficit, to Kat. Thank you, Kat. And what does that mean? That means we have here at the halfway point of September 2021, we are behind by $1,040. Mm-hmm. Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, we're behind. And then, $1,090. $1,090. So that means we've got $190 to finish off last Friday's funding. And again, you know this. You know I despise talking about all this, but it's the only way that we keep things going here. And, you know, when we get into holes like this, things become a bit dire. And they are exactly that. Thank you. Thank you, Kyle. Kyle says, oh my goodness, congrats, Robin. I'm so happy for you and proud of you. I still wish I could stay smoke-free, but that hasn't happened yet. But seriously, that's a great accomplishment for managing to stay off the cigarettes. I was a 43-year smoker. and you can hear this from any other anybody else who's ever quit smoking. You can want to quit with all your soul, but the difference between wanting to quit and being able to quit, the most, and remember, it is the most powerful, most profound addictive chemical known to the mind of human beings. Quitting cigarettes becomes a thing you only do when you want it worse than you have ever wanted anything in your entire life. That's, and you know, you're never entirely free of it. It's just like any other addiction. You will remain in recovery the rest of your days, because even if you find yourself at a place where, I don't really miss them. That every once in a while, something will come along, a whiff on the wind, or just some little something from the back of the lizard portion of your brain or something. You'll go, you know, I want a cigarette. And you'll do that. And it's okay. Because you're in recovery. And I still have that. But the difference for me was, after 43 years of nicotine abuse, after 43 years of that, being able to say, no, this matters. Because, you know, to do that in conjunction with what, who, and how I am, was to realize it was a matter of wanting to live. Not being afraid that the cigarettes were going to kill me. They may yet. But the fact that I could not live in the closet anymore. I just couldn't. So I kicked the door down, burst out, stomped it to the ground, set fire to it, scattered the ashes, and salted the earth where the closet had stood. But it all had to begin with a desire to not smoke and a commitment to the idea. So there. That's what it was. My bias, as Kyle said, made me think it had to be the Louisville Cardinals football team or the St. Louis Cardinals, but Cardinals in the church, I promise, I'm not a judgmental person and don't want to paint with a broad brush, but damn it, why are the Cardinals always fucking up everything? I know. And the thing is, they've been doing it for about 1,700 years. We can thank the College of Cardinals, for instance, for the split in the papacy where there was a pope and an anti-pope for a while. We can thank the popes that the Cardinals chose for the fact that the Reformation came along as a response to just how corrupt the church had become. I'm sorry. I have to give Brother Deacon Ace a cowbell, according to Billable Rick. That's for quitting huffing glue and being no fun anymore. Yeah. For real this time, Stephen New York says, you were able to get insurance, albeit rather imperfect because of the PPACA, so for real this time we can say, thanks, Obama. Yeah, really. And thanks thanks as well to President Biden. Absolutely. Thank you to Lee in New York, no smoking. Congratulations. Rush is without oxycodone, 209 days with a plentiful supply of pineapples. You may not be fun anymore. I never thought of myself as fun. Oh, I'm more fun than I have ever been. Are you kidding? It's just that I'm more fun in, oh, I don't know, different ways. A lot of different ways. Ron in Raleigh says, I'm thinking Pope Frank was talking about a football team in Arizona. On January 1st, it'll be 47 years quit. Don't miss them at all. It gets easier as time goes on. But you're still in recovery. I mean, you just are. Because if you were to pick one up, you'd be as hooked as the day you quit. Or the day before you quit. And that's just the addiction process. Steve explaining, the Pope's comments are a shot across the bow against Cardinal Burke. You remember him. He's the cardinal who got hospitalized because he's he was exactly that, a denier. Cardinal, right, yeah. Kyle said, I needed this good news tonight. I've been a bit down, and I know so many others are so grateful that you're the head of this family and so happy you're living life as your authentic self and as the woman you've always been, even before transition. Thank you. Thank you, Kyle, for getting it. Thank you for getting it. That's so important. It's not a matter of I'm becoming in anything. I'm simply who I've always been and whom I hid for so, so very long. Yes, breaking the closet, and just because you broke a nail in the process, it was still worth it. Yes, it so was. And thank you to Henry. Thank you, Henry, so very kindly for getting us started on the fundraising this evening. We are now down to that magic number, 1040. We're down to 1040 to catch up here with the midway point of the month of September. Thank you, Henry, and I hope many folks will jump in behind you and help out. Thank you so very, very much for being a partial sponsor of, well, of, as it turns out, last Friday's program. So now we are $140 from done with last Friday and last week. Yeah, I know. Kyle says, don't be using none of that commie fascist liberal Obamacare from that Kenyan, black Kenyan Muslim. You, the Antifas and the BLMs and the immigrants might come to your neighborhood. Somehow, I think I'm going to be okay, and they're not the ones I worry about coming to my neighborhood. It's the ones who are in my neighborhood who aren't any of those things. But I know you know of which I speak. Yes, indeed. Lee in New York says, let us also hope the Pope is not mad at birds. I think the birds were named after the princes of the church and not vice versa, but that's me. Anyway, congrats to California. Good job, writes Joey. On this day in 2005, Bush admits failing Hurricane Katrina victims. He admits to the nation that the government had failed to respond adequately to the devastation caused to New Orleans by Hurricane Katrina and urged Congress to approve a massive reconstruction program. Uh-oh. Jeffrey's going to rain on our parade. No, W, you dumbass, you failed to respond, not the government. Bush admitting to failing the people was really disgusting considering the manner in which he initially handled the disaster in the first place. He flew over New Orleans in Air Force One and then kept on flying to San Diego, where he celebrated the birthday of a country singer while con women Condi Rice went shoe shopping.
Do you know who I am?
She later claimed she was buying boots so she could wade in the waters of New Orleans. She should have been given the boot after that bullshit. The only good thing that came out of Hurricane Katrina was the Cambridge rock group Katrina and the Waves. Only the people of New Orleans were not walking on sunshine. Hell would have been lucky to just walk on water.
No, Jeffrey.
Katrina and the Waves were a band founded in 1985 in Cambridge, England. They didn't have anything to do with New Orleans, even though the name of that group, Katrina and the Waves, was quite an ironic name considering the name of the storm and ferocious waves that engulfed New Orleans. Yeah, the name of their one-hit wonder song was also sadly ironic because the sun did not shine in New Orleans for a long time following the hurricane. Ironically, I just visited New Orleans 3 weeks prior to the hurricane in July of 2005 to watch the devastation on television less than a month later. And it was really, really stark. Yeah. Speaking of W, I found him to be disgusting last week when he was lamenting how this country is so divided these days instead of pulling together during these pandemic times. I only wish that this coward, who was AWOL during Vietnam, remember, and then along with his despicable vice, Darth Dick, Count Dicula, that is, started two illegal wars based on rigged intelligence. Again, I only wish that this coward con man Bush would have admitted to starting two illegal wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and admitted that these wars were lost from the beginning and never should have been commenced in the first place. Well, for once in his life, Bush could have taken the right and proper path approach by apologizing to people such as Cindy Sheehan, who lost her son in one of these worthless wars, and making amends with all those people who have suffered losses. Yes, you could say that Bush could have painted a much different picture in his speech instead of his insincere bullshit. This would have demonstrated a real attempt to promote and foster healing and a real sincere attempt to bring this country together. Oh, Jeffrey almost sounds like a policy wonk there. Good points all. Jeffrey and I find it quite ironic that the very same time this debacle in Afghanistan has come to an end, New Orleans is once again underwater. George Bush should have approached the American people with thoughts and acts of contrition instead of a stupid speech about division, much of which he and his cohort, Turd Blossom Karl Rove, nurtured and fostered along during his reign of lies and deception. Oh, and along those same lies, I saw Frank Luntz being interviewed on CNN in August, and He, too, was discussing just how divided this country is. Well, I wonder how that could have possibly happened. Oh, Jeffrey's gone nuts. Both Joey and I went crazy when we heard this pompous-ass Luntz acting so arrogant, callous, and glib during the interview, when in fact it was largely his linguistic parlance that was quite instrumental in creating the great, great divide. Fuck you, Frank. And finally, on this day in 2001, I remember where I was quite vividly. Just 4 days after 9/11/01, I was in New York City attending the wedding of my friend Andy Paleo's oldest son, James. The venue of the wedding was in a park in Queens. James and his sonny picked this spot because while they were courting, they often frequented the park, taking walks, or even having an occasional picnic. They loved that park because when you looked to the west, you had a great view of the World Trade Center and Twin Towers. Sadly, on the Saturday, the 15th of September 2001, the view from the park 4 days later was billowing smoke from where the two towers once stood. James and Sonny decided to go through with the wedding on that day in just the same way that they had previously rehearsed the ceremony, with the towers burning in the background. They exchanged their vows. Needless to say, there was not a dry eye in the crowd as people were crying happy and sad tears simultaneously. This has been Joey's Journal for Prayer Meeting Wednesday, the 15th day of September, with Giraffery crying for what this country has lost over the last 20 years. And a $10 fuck you, Frank, challenge is on the table. So Joey and Giraffery would be happy to double somebody's 10 bucks if it rolls in here. And that would take us down to 10-20. 10-20 to get caught up with fundraising here at the middle of the month. What's that, Ron? Ron says, so you said you busted up Miss Mayella's Schiffer robe? I didn't come out of the closet. I came out of the Schiffer robe. Damn right. Mm-hmm. That's good. And she had to save up nickels for a slap year, yeah. And Kyle pointing out, speaking of California, at least we have a state that's not completely stupid. But there's an element of... of concern to the stupidity, and I guess you know, people are saying, you know, it's a big deal to win almost by a 2-1 margin, and I agree, but Brother Deacon Asa pointed out along the way, this is statistical proof: 67.3% no on the recall to 32.7% yes. This is statistical proof that maggots ain't going anywhere soon. Even a so-called sane state is 33% maggot here in late 2021, knowing all that we know. Being the dyed-in-the-wool, cynical bastard that I am, I think that it's an uphill battle for the same people from here on out. Changing demographics haven't made our job any easier. Over the decades. No, they haven't. And look, it's Prayer Meeting Wednesday, so, I mean, we can have a Bible verse. The maggots ye have always with ye. Actually, the Bible verse is the poor ye have always with ye, but the thing is, Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi who wore a dress every day of his life, didn't say poor what? I'm not sure how it reads in, say, Aramaic or the original publication of the Gospels in Koine Greek, but the poor's, well... I mean, for instance, in the Beatitudes, he says, blessed are the poor in spirit. But he just said the poors. And, you know, the poors ye have always with ye. Kurt Vonnegut said that was a joke. That he was being a little bit funny. And I can see that. But if you just leave it at the poor, that means you can fill in the blank for the poor what? And I've always been inclined to think, well, the poor... in mind, the poor in intelligence, the poor in soul, all of those are a possibility. And thank you, Kyle. Kyle in Kentucky Stand met Joey and Giraffe's Fuck You Frank challenge. And that's wonderful. Thank you so much. And by the way, a 1040 challenge. Billable Rick says, a challenge that only a tax practitioner could appreciate. Since the toll-free number for IRS taxpayer assistance is 800-829-1040, I'd like to make a 1040 challenge using the prefix of that phone number. So I'll apply 829, a total of $19, to any outstanding challenges, and I'll pony up another $19 if my challenge is met. So we need We need to bring in $19 or more, and Billable Rick will match it and add another, and we will be underneath the four-digit mark, which would be huge. And that would actually... get us down to only $83 to go to finish funding for last Friday. Thank you, Billable. And Billable had with a question says, can you ask Giraffe how Joey was able to travel to New York City only 4 days after 9/11/01? I assume he must have driven his jalopy from Ohio to New York City. Now, he damn sure didn't fly, and I don't think he went by boat. And I don't know if the trains were rolling then either, so I'm guessing car, too. Oh, my goodness, I had no idea. By the way, Ron in Raleigh tells me, today is the 61st birthday of Mitch Dorge of the Crash Test Dummies. I love them. God is indeed shuffling his feet. Wow. That makes me feel really old. I listen, when God Shuffled His Feet came out, I listened to that song over and over and over again, because, or that album, actually, the whole thing. Then I got Ferg hooked on it for a while, until we just got completely burned out on it. But it is a genius piece of recording. The lyrics alone are probably among the most literate of any band that I've ever heard. I mean, it ain't every day you get someone saying, I will measure out my life in coffee spoons, you know, T.S. Eliot from the love song of J. Alfred Prufrock, and turning it into a catchy little ditty. God damn it, I said ditty. Now quit that. Stephen New York says, the most ominous statistic out of California to me, 47% of those who voted yes voted for Larry Elder out of 14 total candidates. That really got me. And, of course, like, it was all a hustle. Republican politics now is a hustle, especially if you are a Republican campaigning as a member of a marginalized community. Kate Jenner's candidacy was a hustle in support of some future grift of a reality TV show. Larry Elder was a hustle in support of his odiously unlistenable white wing blather fest. On and on and on. But the larger issue presented, namely that this country is in a bad way simply because one third of this country are dumb as shit, is borne out, really, among other things, by something that happened at the Pentagon today. The ripples continue to roll outward from the center of the pond, from the revelations out of the advance release of copies of Bob Woodward and Robert Costa's book, Peril. And what people are fixating on is the actions described of General Milley. There is something in my brain. Captain, it was terrible. They put things in our ears. That makes me want to call him General Mills. And I'm sorry. I'm not being snarky. It's just, but I have to add the E and take away the S every time I say his name, because I just see that logo and the fact that the goddess of irony badly wants us to have the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff be General Mills. I'm sorry. Can't help it. But no, Nitwit Nero, in one of his little emails, because he can't get on social media anymore and he has to email his shit. That's just still funny. He said, he committed treason. It was treason. He should be prosecuted for treason. And it goes hand in hand with something I said in yesterday's program, namely that Republican policy can just be some wackadoodle, idiotic POS that got babbled into the ear of the universe on some miserable white wing conspiracy driven program, and there's the proof of it. So, what happened was at the press gaggle today at the Pentagon, the Pentagon spokesman, John Kirby, who is the Pentagon spokesman for the Biden administration, and wasn't anywhere within the building even during the 4 years of the nitwit Nero maladministration. He was peppered with questions about whether Mark Milley, General Mark Milley, committed treason by making a call to his opposite in the People's Liberation Army of the People's Republic of China, which it so obviously isn't. Because, first of all, you'd have to establish the enemy status, and, well, great God Almighty, if we couldn't scrounge up enemy status against Mother Russia during the 4 years of the nitwit Nero insurgency and insurrectionist campaign, then how the hell do you apply it to our biggest trading partner? You see my point. I have no doubt. Yeah. But nonetheless, the mad babblings of white-wing media are now actually taken as legitimate policy positions? What?
Nation state with which there are real and significant tensions to try to reduce those, clear things up, make sure you reduce the risk of miscalculation. And I think you saw in the statement that the chairman's office that they put out earlier today that that's exactly what was behind the context here for this particular call, which took place at a difficult time in our nation's history in this particular transition.
And sorry, just to follow up on that point, Acting Secretary Miller, told Fox News that he did not authorize the call. And another one of his deputy chief of staff also said that, in fact, it was the policy at the time that there was no senior government engagement with China. Is that true? But could that possibly be true?
I don't know.
I couldn't answer that. I mean those were before. That was time before we were in office. I can't.
That was the before time.
I can't speak to what the policies were for international communications were. But again, you saw it in the chairman's statement. Why he was having these conversations, and you also saw in his statement that those communications were staffed and coordinated. I would point you back to what the chairman said. Yeah.
Thank you, John. So you said it's routine for the chairman to speak to counterparts in China and Russia. And in this context, the statement talked about strategic stability. So it includes issues related to nuclear capabilities. And you said you worked for a chairman. Can you help us understand, usually when these type of conversations at this level happen, does the chairman brief the president or get the green light from the president before such a conversation? Does he brief the president on the conversation? And does he...
Sometimes I love the multimillionaires of the for-profit media. They're so cute. He's already explained to them he has no idea what the procedures were in the nitwit Nero Pentagon, because really nobody knew what the procedures were in the nitwit Nero Pentagon, because they were being made up on a daily basis by a guy who spent the first 5 hours of his day in executive time watching Fox and Fiends and Fox News and sending tweets and playing golf and getting his hair did. But, nonetheless, you go ahead. You ask that question. Do that. Right.
Get the green light from the Secretary of Defense or brief him after the conversation.
Yeah, it depends. I know that's not a great answer, but it's a true answer. I mean, we expect a chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to coordinate and communicate with his counterparts. And some of those conversations are about very specific issues that have very, very high level interest, and there might even be a request made by the chairman to make a call. Sometimes the secretary could ask him to do that, or even representatives on the National Security Council could say, hey, we think it would be helpful if you reached out to your counterpart and relayed the following message. Sometimes the chairman will be the one that come up with the idea, like, hey, I think I need to get on the phone with General or Admiral so-and-so and have a talk about this. But typically, regardless of the impetus for that kind of a call, it is read out. It is staffed. It's appropriately coordinated, and the chairman or the chairman's office will offer a readout of it up the chain of command so that everybody understands it. And then oftentimes, and you've seen this yourself, I mean, the chairman's public affairs office will release a public readout, not unlike the ones we do when the secretary makes calls. I mean, these are important communications. I mean, they don't just pick up the phone to talk about sports. They talk to
that poor man. They don't pick up the phone to talk about sports. God damn it. I mean, they don't just, well, gab. Yeah, how's the basketball league going there where you are, General? I had the over on the Beijing Shanghai basketball game the other night. It's really, yeah, kind of took a bath on that. They don't call, for God's sakes, they don't call, you know, just to say, well, you know, hello and stuff. No. These are serious high-level phone calls, and sometimes you have to scream like a banshee. Right? Sure. Mm-hmm. Working.
Hello? Hello, Dimitri. Listen, I can't hear too well. Do you suppose you could turn the music down just a little? Oh, that's much better.
It's boogieing in Dasha.
Yes. Fine, I can hear you now, Dimitri. Clear and plain and coming through fine. I'm coming through fine too, eh? Good, then. Well, then, as you say, we're both coming through fine. Good. Well, it's good that you're fine, then, and I'm fine. I agree with you. It's great to be fine. Now then, Dimitri, you know how we've always talked about the possibility of something going wrong with the bomb.
The bomb, Dimitri.
The bomb, Dimitri. The hydrogen bomb. Well, now, what happened is one of our base commanders, he had a sort of, well, he went a little funny in the head, you know. Just a little...
Funny.
Funny. And he went and did a silly thing. Well, I'll tell you what he did. He ordered his planes to attack your country. Well, let me finish, Dimitri. Let me finish, Dimitri. Well, listen, how do you think I feel about it? Can you imagine how I feel about it, Dimitri? Why do you think I'm calling you? Just to say hello? Of course I like to speak to you. Of course I like to say hello. Not now, but any time, Dimitri. I'm just calling up to tell you something terrible has happened. It's a friendly call. Of course it's a friendly call. Listen, if it wasn't friendly, you probably wouldn't have even got it. They will not reach their targets for at least another hour. I am positive, Dimitri. Listen, I've been all over this with your ambassador. It is not a trick. Well, I'll tell you. We'd like to give your air staff a complete rundown on the targets, the flight plans, and the defensive systems of the planes. Yes, I mean, if we're unable to recall the planes, then I'd say that, we're just going to have to help you destroy them, Dimitri. I know there are boys. All right, well, listen, now who should we call? Who should we call, Dimitri? The people... You faded away there. The People's Central Air Defense Headquarters. Where is that, Dmitry? In Omsk, right? Yes. Oh, you'll call them first, will you? Uh-huh. Listen, do you happen to have the phone number on you, Dmitry?
What?
I see. Just ask for Omsk information. I'm sorry, too, Dmitry. I'm very sorry. All right, you're sorrier than I am. But I am sorry as well. I am as sorry as you are, Dmitry. Don't say that you're more sorry than I am, because I'm capable of being just as sorry as you are. So we're both sorry, all right? All right. Yes, he's right here. Yes, he wants to talk to you. Just a second.
Товарищ председатель, говорит Осадский. Да? Да. Что?
Yeah, that's when he finds out the shit's gonna hit the fan. God, I love that scene. Among other things, George C. Scott never utters a word during that scene. He would be the General Mark Milley in this tableau. George C. Scott never says a word, but he sits there cramming his mouth full of gum and runs his hands through his hair, and he's horrified at the idea of giving the Ruskies the necessary technology to shoot down our bombers, but by the same token, he's in a real bind. It's like Kyle said, I'm not sure what to make of this whole thing. I'm not exactly comfortable with generals essentially acting as the leaders and the adults because, gulp, we know what that will get us. But the fact that a general had to act as the stabilizing influence tells you just how fucking insane the last president was and how lucky we are he didn't kill us all. Yeah. I mean, Kyle adding, he did kill hundreds of thousands of Americans, but you get my point. I do. I mean, there's an archive of this program. And you can find moments where I begin the program by saying, well, I woke up this morning and looked around to make sure we still weren't all dead. But we were there. Now, that film was, I think, 1961 or 1962. And it was chilling all by itself. It's darkly hilarious, but it's chilling. And people, wait, is there really a wing attack plan arc? And the United States government had to reassure, no, that could never happen. It could never happen here. No, absolutely. We don't know about the Russians, but it could never happen at all. No. John Kennedy was the president of the United States. And as he watched the upheaval against him, especially after the Bay of Pigs, he realized that the government had a bunch of people in it who really couldn't be trusted. And that is why he was intimately involved with the planning for the production of a brilliant film called 7 Days in May. This might be a time if you, I don't know, get out whatever you need to get through it, but watch maybe Dr. Strangelove and then watch 7 Days in May. John Kennedy, before he was killed, of course, I mean, wouldn't make much, never mind, blonde, worked closely with the production team to make sure that they would be able to use the White House to shoot 7 Days in May, so that the idea of a military coup against constitutional governance in the United States could be made as realistic as possible, so that perhaps the American people might understand exactly what the hell was going on. And then he got all dead. Right. Yeah. Oh, and thank you so much to Mike in Cascadia. Mike says, put me down for meeting Billable Rick's $19 challenge. And in addition, I'll put down a $50 challenge. So Billable Rick's challenge has been met. And that takes us down to, what did I say? God, this gets so complicated. Like 973, and if it is met, Mike and Cascadia's challenge will take us down to 873, and we will finally have last week fully funded. Thank you. Thank you so much, Mike, and thank you, Billable Rick. Badly needed. badly needed this at this point in the month. You know, things like this that kind of make me worry about what's going to happen when I'm away for like a month. Last time I was away from the mic for anything near that long was like 14 years ago when my dad died. And that was awful on multiple levels. But if we can take some of this down, it would be huge, because there's a shit ton of bills waiting to be paid, and you know, various and sundry corporations sort of drumming their fingernails on the desktop, waiting. Right. Yeah, it could never. It could never happen here. Kyle says, "Worst prediction of all time." January of 64. Good time in Dallas changed to good time in Vegas. Yeah, it came out. Yeah, okay. After, I think the production started before, but yeah, it came out in what, 64. Thanks, Dave. Thanks a bunch. I appreciate it. Well, we're going to have a pretty good time in Dallas. We're going to have a pretty good time in Vegas with this. You know, it's weird what that horrible moment in American history did. An author, a mystery author, the same guy who wrote Cape Fear, for instance, John D. MacDonald, was creating a new character called Travis McGee. And he did not start out as Travis McGee. He started out as Dallas McGee. But in the aftermath of the assassination of John Kennedy, he was changed. John D. MacDonald changed his hero from Dallas McGee to Travis McGee. And so you get the 20-year-long, or almost 20-year-long span of Travis McGee novels, which are, I've said before, fascinating little time capsules into a changing culture. It's worth the read. I mean, the sexism is, you know, off the charts. But Travis McGee evolves, as did apparently John D. MacDonald, who was a Second World War veteran. And I think he used some of the things that he had heard about in his World War II service as fodder for the first couple of books. Certainly the first book. And they've all got a color in them. If you're just into reading, I highly recommend it. From a sociological, anthropological, and just a damn... God damn, he was a good writer. He was a great writer, he was. Billable Rick says, cowbell nomination for John Kirby. They don't pick up the phone to talk about sports. Well, of course they like to call to say hello. Only in this case, you know, there's a shade of difference here, because the problem was not... In this case, the problem's not the president. The problem is a general who's gone nuts. What we realized we were dealing with was a president who was absolutely cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs bananas. He'd gone apeshit. Wait a minute, apeshit is bananas. Thank you. Bless you, wherever you are, George Carlin. But, yeah, poor John Kirby. Poor John Kirby. Because no matter how hard he tried, it just didn't get any better. Because, well, the morons you have always with you, even though it's not Monday. It's Wednesday. Prayer meeting Wednesday.
Iron out issues. And so it's important that the interagency have a sense of how that went. And that's very typical.
So the chairman usually coordinates with the White House prior to the conversation, especially if it's about certain topics.
In a typical call.
Wait, what kind of accent is that?
You know, a nation like China, that would be a fully coordinated conversation, and there would be the sharing of information after the fact.
So the White House, basically, and President Trump back then, former President Trump, would actually know about the conversation before taking place, and would know what happened in the conversation. So for him to say if the allegations made in the book by Woodward and Costa were true, then the chairman should be put on trial for treason.
Oh, my goodness.
These are not my words. These are
These are not my words. These are words coming to me from Central Directorate of Questions to Ask American Pentagon spokesman that they are watching me. Please don't make me look terrible.
I can't speak to processes before this administration took office. I just can't. As much as I know you'd like me to, I just can't do that. What I'm telling you is typically, that when the chairman or the secretary, they interact with their counterparts, it's a function of the job. They have to do that. That these conversations are properly coordinated. That's the way it goes. Now, is every single interaction written down and sent in a memo? Probably not. But ones that are of consequence, and they almost all are, they are fully coordinated. I can't speak to processes, previous to January 20th of this year. I can just tell you that how we're approaching the issue in this administration.
Thank you.
Let me get to the phones. I haven't done that yet.
Let's go to the phones. Bill and Busted Knuckle.
I know the Biden administration aspires to be as transparent as possible. In that spirit, would it be possible to get a transcript of General Milley's October 30th conversation with his Chinese counterpart, especially noting that the previous administration released a transcript of President Trump's conversation with President Zelensky? So I'm hoping that this administration can be just as transparent.
Jeff, I'm certainly not going to sign us up to releasing transcripts of conversations that occurred before we took office. And I can't do that. I'd refer you to the chairman.
At which point he hauls out a fifth of old Panther piss, unscrews the lid, takes a giant swig and says, fuck it, I'm out of here. You people are idiots. Because they are. Oh, my God. And it did, I mean, there were some people who were sort of astonished with all of this. The idea that General Milley committed treason. He probably wants to slap somebody right now, or lots of people. Get it, go to the Smithsonian, get those gloves that Patton used, and go and slap the shit out of... Well, who he wants to slap the shit out of probably would be hard to get to down there at Mar-a-Lardass or Bug Monster or wherever the fuck he's hanging out. Because it all starts with this bilious horse shit that happened last night. It's just mind-boggling.
It's actually true, which is hard to believe, that he would have called China... And done these things and was willing to advise them of an attack or in advance of an attack. That's treason. And I would think I've had so many calls today saying that's treason.
Yeah, he's had so many calls from, the little phones that just sort of slosh around in the thin gray settlings between his ears that ask for breath.
I've had so many calls. There have been calls, I tell you, calls. That's treason.
Is there kind of a confession in there? I mean, let's check this again. I'm just curious. See if you hear what I hear. Because it kind of sounds like there's a confessional quality to this. Now, bear in mind, this took place on Newsmuck with Spicy and some Attack Blonde.
So, first of all, if it is actually true, which is hard to believe, that he would have called China and done these things and was willing to advise them of an attack or in advance of an attack, that's treason. And I would think I've had so many calls today saying that's treason.
Yeah, okay. Is this the functional equivalent of O.J. Simpson publishing If I Did It?
I mean, if I was planning a sneak attack on China, because God knows they would have deserved it, and he would have told, that would have been treason.
The fucker was actually thinking about it, wasn't he? Holy shit. Holy shit. Or to get a little John Bluto Blutarski, holy shit. And remember, this is the guy who asked.
What's the point in having having nuclear weapons if we can't use them?
See, that's the thing that sort of tormented me as I was dozing off to sleep last night. And all of a sudden, bing, my eyes opened up. Holy shit. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. He wanted to start a nuclear war. I mean, I don't think someone like General Milley just comes up with this on his own. There's information. I know this sounds a little paranoid. There's information that Woodward, that they didn't give Woodward and Costas. There's shit we still don't know. There were conversations. I mean, look, I mean, we know from the book that, you know, Nancy Pelosi said, yeah, he's nuts, General. And he's been nuts for a long time. Do you think there were any of those 25th Amendment conversations we talked about to such exhaustive length during the 4 years of the nightmare reign of Nitwit Nero? You think that maybe there were some of that? Because somebody was saying, you know, he's crazy. He's not okay. Makes you wonder who. Did Iwanka drop the dime on her dirty old daddy? You know, I love my daddy, but, well, he's gone a little funny in the head. You know, funny. Somebody was doing this, and what's got Nitwit Nero beside himself is the fact that he doesn't know who. He doesn't know who. And he's still wondering, because he's paranoid as hell, because he's waiting for the other shoe to drop relative to being indicted. And he doesn't know. Again, that's probably why he was not in New York City on September 11th. He was afraid of being amenable to service of process. And he didn't want somebody showing up and saying, Mr. Trump, you're served.
God damn it. I don't want to be your friend anymore.
Yeah, that too, Brother Deacon Asus, is the poorly educated ye have always with ye. You betcha. Zing. So I have a feeling it's only going to get weirder. And this Mark Milley committed treason thing is probably not going to go away because, well, it'll sell car insurance and pharmaceutical drugs on cable news channels. Because the level of capitalism in the multimillionaire for-profit media really is that crass. Yeah, Lee in New York says,
so many calls.
The former guy got the calls on his Fisher-Price phone. With the little red clown's nose in the middle, yeah.
Oh, look, it's another call. I better answer it. You're on the phone with the president. Talk to me. Treason? Really?
We are lucky to be alive. We are lucky to be alive. Military oath, Stephen New York says, at first when I heard this, what disturbed me was the notion that General Milley expressed his intention to disobey orders, and this would run afoul of the civilian authority of the military. However, two things occur to me. General Milley indicated to people that orders from Trump to do what we now know he considered were unlawful orders, and the UCMJ, the Uniform Code of Military Justice, as I understand it, actually requires a soldier to disobey such orders. In addition, I recall that the oath all soldiers take is to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. The thing that really is giving me the chills is that I never ever thought I would see the day when that domestic enemy was the President of the United States and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff was one of the ones making that assessment. And, you know, this is breaking right along party lines. It absolutely is. It's strictly a Republican-Democrat kind of thing. If you are liberal, progressive, a Democrat, what have you, you tend to see General Milley as having taken an extraordinarily unusual action in the name of not destroying life on planet Earth. But if, on the other hand, you're one of those people who picks their teeth with their toenail clippings and wears "He Can Grab Me by the Pussy Anytime" t-shirts to rallies and t-shirts that say, "Fuck your feelings," well, then you think General Milley committed treason. And you also think that the vaccine has liquid barcodes in it that allow Bill Gates to personally track you using his secret decoder ring that he got in a box of Wheaties, which is made by what? General Mills! Yes! See how it works? It's all there! Chris pointing out, did you say General Mills? The marmalade moron certainly... well done. Certainly is cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. I hear Kimberly Gargoyle is real good at turning tricks. Those tricks are not for kids. Eric kind of looks like the Lucky Charms leprechaun. Have a wonderful show, Robin. Cheerios for now. Oh, wait, that's a much more vigorous cowbell. Thank you, Chris. Thank you. That's brilliant. Yes. And Matt in San Francisco, subject line, "Oh, for fuck's sake!" The questions directed at this spokesperson from the press are based on the premise that the former president was of sound mind and operating within established norms. I don't know how Matt was able to type that without just collapsing in paroxysms of hysterical laughter. Where the hell were all of them during those torturous 4 years? Not to mention all this praise being heaped on people in government who did their level best to negate the threat caused by the person in charge being fucking crazy! Enough of this storyline. No one with the power had the courage to exercise that power and get rid of the crazy Mother Tucker. Only Nancy Pelosi had the courage to bring articles of impeachment and fulfill her constitutional duty. All the rest of these courageous government officials can dine on my dirty underwear. That is a profoundly impressive and funny and disturbing image, Matt. Yeah. Oh, my God. It's the truth, though. They all knew he was that nuts, and no one did anything. And before Mike Pencil Neck Geek's reputation, by the way, can be further rehabilitated, that he was some steady hand on the tiller. No. The passage that is so thoroughly cringeworthy is when he goes to his fellow Hoosier Dan Quayle for advice. Imagine, just really, imagine going to Dan Quayle for advice on anything. I wouldn't ask Dan Quayle how to get to church, and he's a big church guy. I wouldn't ask Dan Quayle whether M&M's melt in your mouth and not in your hand. No. But Mike Pencil Neck Geek, apparently not having gotten any quality information from Mother. Well, he wouldn't ask Mother anyway, because she's supposed to remain silent and accept orders from some guy. But he went to Dan Quayle. Senior Indiana statesman Dan Quayle. For advice, and Dan Quayle told him that your hands are tied. You can't do anything. You listen to the parliamentarian and you move on. And even then, Mike Pencil Neck Geek whined. Lord God, he whined. "But you don't understand the position I'm in." Now, if there was some report that said Dan Quayle responded by saying, "Oh, shut up and go and change your armor," I would feel much better. The Vice President of the United States was whining to a former Vice President of the United States that he was uncomfortable because he was not being he wasn't able to be as fawning and obsequious and servile to the President of the United States as the president wanted him to be, and that the president had told him,
you know what, I don't want to be your friend anymore. I picked the wrong guy for the job. That's all. That's all. And I'm not going to be your friend.
Oh, for Christ's sakes. Yeah. Okay, thank you, Billable. Billable says, give yourself a cowbell for your connection of General Mills to Bill Gates' liquid barcodes. Well, it was there for anybody who saw. All you had to do was look. It was right there. It was unmistakable. It was real. And still is. But, Lord God. Lee in New York says, I would go to Dan Quayle for advice. We have to add the obligatory on how to spell potato. No, potato has an E. Yeah, I'm off to Latin America. I wish I'd spent more time studying Latin. An actual statement made by Dan Quayle. The man who, remember, if you're old enough, do you remember? Do you remember the nomination of Dan Quayle? Hey, we didn't want George H.W. Bush to be president. No, of course not, we didn't. But we realized that there were a lot of high-level Republicans out there, some allegedly even intelligent, that he might have gone to, but no. We all sat there and went, who? What? This guy's a boob. He's an idiot. Well, okay. At least we'll get past this, and America will return to its senses, and we'll never have an absolute, certifiable, bumbling, stumbling, twit, boob of an idiot anywhere near the presidency all over and ever again. Woo! And then, then 8 years later, W. ran for president and Republicans nominated him. Oh, God. I mean, it's a dark kind of humor, kind of like Dr. Strangelove is, but then history's funny that way, yeah. Failsafe 1964 subject line, Robert in Australia writes, I woke up to Peter Sellers as the U.S. president talking on the phone to the Russian premier. Oh, fuck, I thought. What's happened now? Oh, Trump almost started World War IV? I spent 4 years expecting that to happen. Anyway, you recall the film Failsafe 1964? It was made at the same time as Dr. Strangelove by the same studio, Columbia Pictures. Kubrick insisted Dr. Strangelove be released first, and it was in January 64. Failsafe was released later in 1964 and received excellent reviews, but suffered from being second. The plot is the same as Dr. Strangelove, except that it's combined human and computer error that send bombers to nuke Moscow. The U.S. president has to convince the premier of the CCCP that it's a mistake and not to retaliate. No spoilers here, just in case people haven't seen it. It's an excellent film, well worth a watch, and it's absolutely, without a doubt, chilling. And Henry Fonda was brilliant. Yeah. He so was. And, yeah. Oh, those heady days of 1988 when we thought that, well, we'll never have a guy as stupid as Dan Quayle anywhere near government again.
The media said what?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know. It's just almost irresistible, isn't it? Yeah, it sure is. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Steve asking the same question along the lines of, Failsafe. Yeah, the movie book called Failsafe was on this subject, too. It was kind of clunky. Whereas Nitwit Nero was kind of crazy. No, there's no kind of involved. He's just nuts. I mean, G-N-U-T-S, nuts. Lord. So, by the way, we have crossed over into the second hour of the program. We're desperately trying to finish up funding with for last Friday. And there is a $50 challenge on the table, courtesy of Mike in Cascadia, that badly needs being met. And that would get us down past Friday and get us started on actual funding for Monday. So if someone would like to meet that or some portion of that, that would be lovely. Ask Dan Quayle. Christopher in Portland says, I wouldn't ask Dan Quayle how or where to go bird shooting. Dick Cabezaccini would be the best person to ask for that. Wait a minute. Dick Cabezaccini? Dick Cabeza. Yeah, I don't think that's the same as Cabana, but no. And the other obligatory Quayle reference, Lee of New York, says, thanks to Senator Lloyd Benson. Senator, I served with Jack Kennedy. I knew Jack Kennedy. Jack Kennedy was a friend of mine. Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy. Oh, and he so thoroughly was not any kind of, yeah. Now, there's an interesting way to look at it. Thank you to Kevin in Western Mass. Rupert Murdoch is alive today because of General Milley. Not much of a stretch, really. Kevin adding, Mark Milley saved this country. Heck, maybe even the world we live in. And I'll bet even money that he strongly suggested to make preemptive moves before the coup of 6 January. But he was ignored, or they didn't heed his warnings, and that may come out in the ongoing probe. The right-wing media money grab is sickening. These pundits know Milley didn't commit treason, but hey, the money's too good, like you mentioned in the show yesterday. Yeah, will the right-wingers stop being anti-vax and anti-mask? And well, no, they won't, because the money's too good. And just try to explain to a fucking Republican sometime that dead people can't spend money. What? Wait, huh? What? I know. Your point, Kevin, is well taken. They're going to eat their own soon enough. No one called for Schlesinger's head in the Fairness Doctrine times. If anything, he got a few pats on the back. Have the right-wing crazies gone after Quayle yet? Oh, I got to figure they have. Because it's almost a requirement at this point, because he was challenging their twisted and psychotic and certainly lunatic vision of reality. It's not a nice place to be when you're in the room with the person whose delusions you're challenging. It's downright painful. And so, Lord God, there's just so much out there. I mean, it's been kind of a rough time for the FBI of late, and we'll get to it, but 4 brilliant gymnasts testified in front of Congress today about the horrifying abuse that they suffered at the hands of Larry Nassar with the connivance of USA Gymnastics. And it was if you caught any portion of it, it was chilling. But the other place where the FBI is catching hell, because it just won't go away, and I'm glad it won't, the investigation into the claims made by Christine Blasey Ford regarding the sexual abuse that she suffered at the hands of a beer-sodden teenage brat Kavanaugh. God, 2018 seems so long ago. And remember, the confirmation process was paused in order to investigate Dr. Ford's claims. only here's what happened, or more importantly, what didn't happen. The FBI didn't investigate shit. Nothing. Instead, they took the 4,500 allegations against Brett Kavanaugh, didn't investigate any of them, and just handed the list to the Nitwit Nero administration. No, really. They just gave them to the White House. You know, this included an allegation from a classmate of Kavanaugh's at Yale who said that he had exposed himself to her while they were in college there. Yeah, the FBI said, ah, who gives a shit? And just handed it all to the White House for whatever dirty tricks they might have wanted to pursue. And Glenn Kirshner, former U.S. attorney, about plum had a hissy, demanding a full investigation of the FBI's incompetence, and at this point in time taken in conjunction with what happened relative to the rape of little girls and the sexual abuse of little girls by Dr. Larry Nassar, and the FBI going, what? Huh? Sorry, oh, shut up. Well, I wouldn't be surprised if maybe Christopher Wray got to go. The story in The Guardian notes that the FBI said, well, we don't have any authority to investigate. Even when the Senate told them to go and, oh, we don't got no authority. Yeah. And in the Guardian report, it says, at the heart of the new questions that Wray will face later this week when he testifies before the Senate Judiciary Committee is a 2010 memorandum of understanding that the FBI has recently said constrained the agency's ability to conduct any further investigations of allegations of misconduct. With Glenn Kirshner saying, let's start doing some damn justice. And added, women in Texas deserve it, as do the rest of America. Senator Sheldon Whitehouse also opined, and he said, in its years-late response to our questions, the FBI leaned hard on the notion that this memorandum of understanding limited its authority to be the FBI and investigate wrongdoing. Now that we have the memorandum of understanding, it's even harder to understand the Bureau's excuses for ignoring credible information it received. Director Wray ought to be ready to answer my questions about this episode. I won't stop asking until he does. You know, Elbert and Charlene, y'all just must feel so doggone proud every time Sheldon Whitehouse does something like this, because the man insists on doing his damn job. And I'm so envious. I'm so daggum jealous of y'all having a competent senator when I got Joe fucking Manchin. Huh? Jesus. But here's the other thing that Kirshner pointed out in a discussion with Lawrence O'Donnell on MSNBC. He said he presumes that the Biden administration still has those 4,500 accusations, and that the Biden administration could demand an investigation of them. What do you think of that? Because I think a caveat comes with that. The FBI is still led by Christopher Wray. And the top brass of the FBI is largely still the same top brass that was there when Nitwit Nero was there, and they refused to do a goddamn thing about 4,500 allegations of sexual abuse against a guy who miraculously was having all of his debts paid. You'd think that would get the FBI fired up for once. Oh, but wait. They're not brown. They're not Muslim. And they haven't been conned into saying that they were willing to blow up the Sears Tower. Oh, for fuck's sake. That's how this all plays out. So if, in fact, the Biden administration does still have those 4,500 allegations, I wouldn't ask anybody to investigate jack shit until the problem itself is solved. cowbell for Megan. All right. Who had Dan Quayle Saves Democracy on their 2021 bingo card? And I'm going to need a copy of that laugh sound bite because I need to walk through a haunted house attraction playing it, see how many people I run out of the house with it. Ooh, you have, well, we already know Megan has a wicked, wicked sense of humor. Ha, ha, ha! Mm-hmm. I agree. Billable Rick says it's time to fire Christopher Wray for good cause, unlike the situation with James Comey. But, I mean, is that enough, Billable? Is that enough? Or do we need more? Does it need to be him and the horses he rode in on? Does it need to be him and the other brass at the FBI? I think we've got another one of those situations on our hands where, you know, the FBI just sort of, well, you know, sucks. I don't know. But, like I said, it only gets worse. And frankly, you know, we do have a Congress, and if the Congress was willing to do its damn job, then Brett Kavanaugh would have long since been impeached, you know, along with Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Slappy Thomas, at the very least. Maybe old Balls and Strikes John Roberts while we're at it. Because God knows he lied under oath. I'm just going to call Balls and Strikes. Here we go. Got to respect stare precises. Decises, not precises. What are you thinking? Yeah, we gotta protect that. Yeah, how's that working out with the shadow docket? But I don't know. Over at FBI headquarters, it's got to be a really, really bad day. Because the FBI Taliban Indianapolis field office, God, it's Talibandiana Wednesday on the horn. Dan Quayle, Mike Pencilneck Geek. And we talked about this a few weeks back. The Taliban Indianapolis field office of the FBI just really didn't want to hear anything about a bunch of little gymnasts being sexually abused and, you know, raped. God almighty. Simone Biles, Michaela Maroney, Allie Raisman, and Maggie Nichols showed more courage today in speaking to the Congress of the United States than every goddamn maggot in America combined. And I've been following some of Michaela Maroney's story. Remember, she captured the heart of America, what was it, at the London Olympics when she didn't get the medal that she worked for, and did that sort of side-eyed, kind of, you know, smirky, and America just went wild over her. Well, the world she was living in was a world in which she was hiding horrifying. And trying not to hide it, though, but living with the horrors that had been perpetrated against her. And so in her statement, I know that the members of Congress can be jaded, and certainly senators. I mean, at least Joe Manchin wasn't there to ask her what she was wearing. Young lady.
Well, I've never met the young lady.
My heart just bled for her. Because it's an awful feeling.
Done?
There we go.
All right. Good morning. Thank you, Chairman Durbin, Ranking Member Grassley, and members of the Judiciary Committee for inviting me to speak today. As most of you are probably aware, I was molested by the U.S. Gymnastics National Team and Olympic Team doctor, Larry Nassar. And in actuality, he turned out to be more of a pedophile than he was a doctor. What I'm trying to bring to your attention today is something incredibly disturbing and illegal. After telling my entire story of abuse to the FBI in the summer of 2015, not only did the FBI not report my abuse, but when they eventually documented my report 17 months later, they made entirely false claims about what I said. After reading the Office of Inspector General's OIG report, I was shocked and deeply disappointed at this narrative they chose to fabricate.
Hold on. That's a big deal. She just said twice that the FBI, and I know this is not going to come as a surprise to some people, not me, certainly not most of this Horn Family Community congregation, but she just said under oath in the Senate of the United States that the FBI is comprised of liars. Oh, well, because remember, lying to the FBI is a goddamn felony. The FBI lying to the rest of the country? Ah! Or to a young rape victim? Not so much.
They chose to lie about what I said and protect a serial child molester rather than protect not only me, but countless others. My story is one in which Special Agent in Charge Jay Abbott and his subordinates did not want you to hear. And it's time that I tell you. In the summer of 2015, like I said, I was scheduled to speak to the FBI about my abuse with Larry Nassar over the phone. I was too sick to go meet with anyone in person, and talking about this abuse would give me PTSD for days. But I chose to speak about it to try and make a difference and protect others. I remember sitting on my bedroom floor for nearly 3 hours as I told them what happened to me. I hadn't even told my own mother about these facts, but I thought as uncomfortable and as hard as it was to tell my story, I was going to make a difference and hopefully protecting others from the same abuse. I answered all of their questions honestly and clearly, and I disclosed all of my molestations I had endured by Nassar to them in extreme detail. They told me to start from the beginning. I told them about the sport of gymnastics, how you make the national team, and how I came to meet Larry Nassar when I was 13 at a Texas camp. I told them that the first thing Larry Nassar ever said to me was to change into shorts with no underwear because that would make it easier for him to work on me. And within minutes, he had his fingers in my vagina.
Shame on me. I'm so sorry. This probably should have had a trigger warning in front of it. I'm so sorry. That having been said, if you need to walk away, there are about, a little less than 4 minutes left in this clip. And it is brutal. I apologize for not warning ahead of time. But you can kind of, if you need to take a break and walk away, I'm going to restart her testimony now. I'm sorry.
The FBI then immediately asked, did he insert his fingers into your rectum? I said, no, he never did. They asked if he used gloves. I said, no, he never did. They asked if this treatment ever helped me. I said, no, it never did. This treatment was 100% abuse and never gave me any relief.
We need names. We need names of the, who was doing this questioning? There's got to be a record. They keep meticulous records. Because I want to know the name of the FBI agent who wanted to know if digitally penetrating a little girl was therapeutic for the injuries she had that didn't have anything to do with her reproductive organs. Kind of. And were both of this FBI agent's hands visible at the time of the phone call? Was this a male FBI agent? If it was, why? Then again, we live in a country where, and I'm really, really old, but I do remember this, where we had a man nominated to sit on the Supreme Court of the United States who had authored an opinion saying that it was okay for cops to digitally penetrate a 9-year-old little girl in a strip search because often drug dealers hide their drugs in the orifices of children. Yeah, I remember that. Because that man was Supreme Court Associate Justice Samuel Alito. And the sexual abuse of little girls is one of the sad but necessary consequences of our war on drugs. God damn. Whew. Really, though. Can anybody, is that discoverable? Can we find out who asked her these questions? Was it, holy, I mean, I understand there's a certain forensic clinicality, is that a word, to the questions that you ask in these sorts of situations. I understand that. But there's a right way and a wrong way to ask them. And you know what? A telephone interview ain't necessarily the right way. There should probably be a counselor on hand. I mean, really? Phone interview? And it doesn't get any better.
I then told the FBI about Tokyo the day he gave me a sleeping pill for the plane ride to then work on me later that night. That evening, I was naked, completely alone, with him on top of me, molesting me for hours. I told them I thought I was going to die that night because there was no way that he would let me go. But he did. I told them I walked the halls of Tokyo Hotel at 2 a.m. at only 15 years old. I began crying at the memory over the phone, and there was just dead silence. I was so shocked at the agent's silence and disregard for my trauma. After that minute of silence, he asked, "Is that all?"
And there's our answer. He asked.
Just the facts, man. Just the facts.
Yeah, Kevin says, "How could the FBI not strongly suggest to her to get an attorney? Who should have been with her during questioning? Am I wrong here? Inform her parents with help of an attorney?" No, you're not wrong. Not wrong at all. This is a complete breakdown in anything resembling ethics on the part of the FBI. Not surprising to some of us, I suppose. Kevin noting, if it was me doing the questioning, I would have said, "Look, we can't do this on the phone. Have your parents get an attorney." Right. And she goes to great lengths to describe what happened in greater length than she did there in the Senate. I think it was Tokyo where she describes the fact that the U.S. Olympic, the USA Gymnastics insisted that she be in a room by herself in the hotel, and that her parents were not even allowed to be in the same hotel with her. Who the fuck was running USA Gymnastics? Ghislaine Maxwell? Who was running it? Harvey Weinstein? And these little girls at the time were not mere passive participants. They were groomed and they were used and they... And, you know, Larry Nassar is in prison in Michigan for the probably rest of his natural born days. But that is not the alpha and the omega of what went wrong here. The FBI has canned, thank you, Ralph, serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department. The FBI has canned Michael Langeman, the lead agent on the failed Nassar investigation. And I guess that's supposed to be sufficient to the task at hand. He didn't follow up. He was the supervisory special agent in the FBI's Indianapolis field office. And he was the one who interviewed Michaela Maroney in 2015. And yes, he lost his job 2 weeks ago. Ms. Maroney speaks of having read the Inspector General's report. I can't imagine the horror of doing even that. But even in the Inspector General's report, the Justice Department Inspector General wouldn't even name Michael Horowitz as Michael Horowitz. There was criticism, harsh criticism, as well as for his boss, Jay Abbott, noting that not only did they botch the investigation, they then lied to the Inspector General for it. Where's the indictment? Again, lying to the FBI is a goddamn felony. The FBI lying, maybe you lose your job. And the Washington Post report notes FBI firings are relatively rare. Gee, I wonder how you wind up with such a corrupt institutional culture then. Most investigators facing serious discipline choose to retire or resign before they can be terminated. Yeah. Now, none of this happened, to be fair. None of this happened on Christopher Wray's watch. He wasn't director then. But he was in the Senate today, too. And he keeps promising, there's going to be significant changes about how agents investigate allegations of sex crimes against children. Yeah. The lawyer for many of Nassar's victims said it was long overdue that Horowitz be fired. He went on to say, however, John Manley did, I can't help but wonder if this is because of the Senate hearing and the timing seems cynical. He described the entire tableau as what we believe is a conspiracy by the FBI, USA Gymnastics, and the Olympic Committee to suppress the Nassar investigation. And we believe those participating in it should be criminally charged. Hear, hear. The fact that Mr. Langeman perjured himself and lied to investigators, both of which are crimes, sends a message to others at the FBI that you can get away with it. Ray, meanwhile, according to an unnamed source in the Post report, is outraged. Outraged, I tell you. Outraged at the way it was handled. And he wants to make clear that this is in no way acceptable, should not have happened, will not happen again, and is not reflective of the agency. God damn it, I hate that kind of weasel language. I really, really do. Because just about any time somebody says, well, you know, this is not reflective of the culture at the agency, that's because it is reflective of the culture at the agency. You know, we were talking about John Kennedy earlier. And in the aftermath of the Bay of Pigs, not only he, but former President Harry S. Truman said that the CIA should be dismantled, root and branched, and never allowed to reconstitute again. God knows how many innocent human beings murdered in soccer stadiums, thrown from helicopters, quietly assassinated. How many innocent human beings might have been saved had their advice been heeded. And maybe it's time to do the same goddamn thing with the FBI. Remember, it was born in corruption. It was absolutely born in corruption. And it was the single most vicious, corrupt agency in the United States government for the entire time that it was run by J. Edgar Hoover. And cultures cultures embed in the soil from which they grew. And it's not curable. Because at the end of the day, they know they're the goddamned FBI. The Inspector General report says there are numerous and fundamental errors. Errors? Really? Yeah. The Indianapolis field office never opened an investigation or an assessment of Nassar when the allegations were brought to them. This guy who was putting Michaela Maroney through all of this trauma, making her relive this triggered hell, he didn't even write up a formal report of the interview until 17 months after the phone call. And her lawyer says even that is fundamentally wrong. Larry Nassar abused 70-plus victims. And the plus part of it means upwards of 120. He was a serial criminal. And as if anything needed to be added to this story to make it more nauseating, more infuriating. Well, it turns out that the head of the Indianapolis field office, Abbott, well, he had a little tete-a-tete, a little chit-chat with Stephen Penny. Stephen Penny at the time was the president of USA Gymnastics. And Abbott wanted a job on the Olympic Committee. How many crimes can we find to charge here? And no fucking plea bargains. Up you go, bub. And Abbott actually did apply for the job, but ha ha, he didn't get it. And then when he was asked about it, he lied about ever having applied for it. And rather than face being terminated, just as the source pointed out to the Washington Post, he retired. He retired, and he's got a nice pension, home in the burbs, maybe in, out, I don't know, outside Tallahassee. Appalus. Yeah. And he's in prison, Nassar is. On state charges out of Michigan for decades. He's actually sitting in a federal facility in Florida. He's doing 60 years for child porn. And by the way, it just keeps getting worse. The Federal Bureau of Prisons let Larry Nassar spend $10,000 on himself in prison and at the time had paid only $300 of the more than $60,000 that he owes to his victims. $60,000? This fucker needs a judgment of tens of millions of dollars against him. Good God. And we wonder. No, we don't wonder. Megan says, oh my fucking God. After what I just heard and Corona and dealings with kids on the southern border, I don't want to hear anything from the right wing about protecting kids. Because like everything else, they've proven to be liars when the time comes to act. And hearing this just makes me burn with rage, with the fire of a thousand suns for Simone Biles. All the crap she took for bowing out of competing while she was most likely triggered nine ways from Sunday. Fuck every last person who pissed and moaned and bitched that she wasn't being the performing monkey they wanted in the Olympics this year. P.S. Can we just put Larry Nassar in the town square and light him on fire? It'd be saving money and doing a public service all at the same time. Yeah. Hand him over. Hand him over to his victims. And let them determine the means, method, and manner and duration of his punishment. Yeah. Of course, that might seem a little barbaric, but we're kind of in a barbaric time. I mean, is 60 years in prison dropping 10K on yourself at the prison canteen? I mean, I know the doors clang shut and everything, but is that appropriate? Yeah. Oh, Billable Rick, with some experience, says, the FBI does keep detailed notes and reports of all witness interviews that it conducts. It's memorialized on an FD-302. It will contain, Billable Rick says, here's a summary of the FBI interview report form FD-302 that I found on Thomson Reuters. 302 has the name of the agent who wrote it, the date of the interview, the name of the interviewee, the place the interview took place, and a description of what the interview said, either in narrative form or a recitation of the questions and answers. The description is not a verbatim account. And again, it took 17 months for the agent who did the phone interview to come up with a 302. Somehow, that can't be okay. There's got to be some sort of rule or reg about contemporaneity in regard to these things, because otherwise, it's not a contemporaneous recorded recollection, and it just becomes nasty ass hearsay. Yeah. Whew. And, Arnold, this is some crazy shit, and I'm having a hard time with this, Robin. This is kick people's ass shit. These pigs, we train them this way, have no soul. Tracy then asks, COINTELPRO anyone? Lord, I know. And, not reflective of our culture. Christopher says, so reminiscent of how folks in charge continually stated, this is not who we are, when referring to the atrocities committed by the best of us at Abu Ghraib. Yeah, notice how that only comes out when something awful has happened. When something awful happens that is reflective of an institutional culture, the first thing they say, well, you know, this is not reflective of our culture. It's exactly reflective. It's your culture. Oh, this is not who we are. $10,000, Matt in San Francisco asks. What in God's name is available for purchase in prison that runs up a $10,000 bill? Oh, I don't know. Maybe you buy cigarettes for the cell block to, you know, sort of protect yourself. You know, candy bars. And still, it's a lot of money. Marlboro's on me. It's on the big house. Ooh, there's a reference. A lot of this centered on Michigan State University, but they call the football stadium at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, they call that the Big House. Sorry. No regrets.
Those words in itself was one of the worst moments of this entire process for me. to have my abuse be minimized and disregarded by the people who were supposed to protect me, just to feel like my abuse was not enough. But the truth is, my abuse was enough, and they wanted to cover it up. USA Gymnastics, in concert with the FBI and the Olympic Committee, were working together to conceal that Larry Nassar was a predator. I then proceeded to tell them about London and how he'd signed me up last on his sheet so he could molest me for hours twice a day. I told them how he molested me right before I won my team gold medal. How he gave me presents, bought me caramel macchiatos and bread when I was hungry. I even sent them screenshots of Nassar's last text to me, which was, "Michaela, I love how you see the world with rose-colored glasses."
Jesus, how are we going to get through this without the vomiting starting? Oh, my God. This, for anyone who is not familiar with the terminology that goes with this sort of thing, this is called grooming. Rose-colored glasses. Yeah, maybe he felt like since she was... That's another way of saying that a girl is optimistic and hopeful and happy. Well, he was certainly putting paid to all of that now, wasn't he? Yeah, he really, really was. Jesus. This is so screwed up. This is so vicious. This is so hateful. And I can think of ways to make it worse. I can think of the fact that prison cultures are brutal places. And that to some he may have hero status for what he did to 120 people, young people.
Yeah, tell us again about what you done to the little gymnast, Larry. Ugh. Let's have another one of them Larry Nassar pizza parties, and you can tell us about all the time you blah blah blah.
This is bad. This is evil. This is nasty.
I hope you continue to do so. This was very clear, cookie-cutter pedophilia and abuse. And this is important because I told the FBI all of this, and they chose to falsify my report and to not only minimize my abuse, but silence me yet again. I thought, given the severity of this situation, that they would act quickly for the sake of protecting other girls. But instead, it took them 14 months to report anything when Larry Nassar, in my opinion, should have been in jail that day. The FBI, USOC, and USAG sat idly by as dozens of girls and women continued to be molested by Larry Nassar. According to the OIG report, about 14 months after I disclosed my abuse to the FBI, nearly a year and a half later, the FBI agent who interviewed me in 2015 decided to write down my statement, a statement that the OIG report determined to be materially false. Let's be honest. By not taking immediate action from my report, they allowed a child molester to go free for more than a year. And this inaction directly allowed Nassar's abuse to continue. What is the point of reporting abuse if our own FBI agents are going to take it upon themselves to bury that report in a drawer? They had legal, legitimate evidence of child abuse and did nothing. If they're not going to protect me, I want to know, who are they trying to protect?
And that's where the clip ends. That is where the clip ends. And the question is, are there any answers? Does she get any answers? Is she entitled to any answers. Yes, she's entitled. Will she have them? That's another question. Personally, I think Christopher Ray should have showed up on bended knees and begged her forgiveness for the rest of his natural-born days and resigned and walked away, because he's going to be tarnished in this. No, he was not the director of the FBI when it happened. Remember, this shit's going on in 2015. This is even before Nitwit Nero is part of the problem. It's disgusting. And I'm going to knock off an hour early. I'm shaking. I'm not okay. I'll be back. Thorn in the Side Thursday tomorrow. If somebody could kindly meet Mike in Cascadia's challenge, I would deeply appreciate it. I'm sorry, Dave in Taliban, Deanna was waiting, and I started into this thinking it would, and it didn't go the way I planned at all, and it's not okay, and it's not all right. And I'm sorry, Dave. And believe you me, I'd rather go into the third hour. But I just don't think I can. And it's not entirely this. It is the fact that, you know, I said in regard to this day that I have been blessed with the love and the warmth and the affection and the kindness of so many people. But there are two people out there who have been anything but. And they are the last of my birth family. And they're behaving horribly. And doing everything in their power to hurt me. And they did a real number on me a couple of days ago. And now they're doubling down. And I'm not all right. But I will be. I will be. I most assuredly will be. Thank you, Christopher. Thank you, Christopher, for jumping in. There's $40 remaining on Mike's challenge now, Mike in Cascadia. Thank you so much. Rico, in the gray and somber Berg, with a note, says, I will never forget how Pat Tillman, a superstar cornerback with the Arizona Cardinals, gave up his career and the millions that came with it to enlist in the Army and service in Afghanistan, only to be killed by friendly fire and have the military covered up to its ever-living disgrace. I want to put up a $40 challenge in honor of Tillman, because that's the number he wore with Arizona, and if it's met, I'll kick in another 80. Thank you. Thank you, Rico. You're so kind. Just got a note from Todd saying, hang in there. Some folks don't know your story. It's true. It's true. But let's put it this way. Triggering is a real thing. Thank you, Jude. Thank you, my dear sister. Thank you. And I'm not trying to just limp out. I'm just not okay. Because I've resisted, and I know, oh my God, I know so many people who have been through things similar to that which I'm going through. Whether, wherever you are in the rainbow, LGBTQQIA+, so many people have lost, been abandoned by family. And I have resisted cutting these people out of my life. But sometimes you realize you're not cutting them out of yours. They've already cut you out of theirs. So there we go. So thanks, everybody. Thanks to all of you Patreon and PayPal subscribers who keep this program going, tottering along. Thank you. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this program in whatever manner you so choose. And I hope I hope there was not too much. I did not. I should have thought. I should have given it greater thought. I should have been more mindful. And I hope I have not harmed any of you running that audio. I sincerely hope that. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you so much to Brother Bishop Steve and Georgia Stan in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Remember, brand new fresh Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. Get your booster. I'm planning on, I think I'm going to try to get my booster on Friday. If I can. Because I know I got a clean COVID test. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Keep your social distance. For God's sakes, if some FBI agent comes to you prattling about, you know what, I'm going to leave the Indianapolis office, I'm going to get me a job with the Olympic Committee. Avoid that person like the plague. Because God, oh God, oh God, he is. Later.